I was such a mess after, like, big time. I think a part of me thought we might actually get back together until I saw her at the hotel, and it all hit me at once that I was being totally delusional.
I'm sorry, I say simply. He nods, smiling at the ground.
Thanks. It sucked, but I'm better now.
Better now doesn't necessarily mean over her, but I'm kept from asking for clarification when shots ring through the air. Too close for comfort. We both jump, and Ethan pushes himself up to peek over the edge while I stumble to stand next to him. What's happening?
I'm not sure.
He moves from one side of the enclosure to the other, watching, his finger resting on the trigger. I clutch my own gun to my side, and my heart is pounding in my ears. It's just a game, and I could technically surrender at any time, but my body doesn't seem to know that it isn't real.
How many shots do you have left?
He asks. I was a little trigger-happy at the start of the game, firing off in random bursts without really focusing on aim. My gun feels light. Not many. I peek inside the hopper, where four yellow balls roll around in the plastic canister. Four. Ethan opens up his own hopper and drops two more into my gun. Footsteps pound on the dirt. It's Clancy, still shirtless and nothing more than a pasty, skin-colored blur. He fires off a shot and ducks behind a tree.
Run!
He shouts. Ethan reaches for my sleeve, tugging me away from the wall and pointing toward the woods.
Go!
I break into a sprint, feet pounding against the wet ground. I'm not sure if he's behind me, but I race for the next tree and duck behind it. Ethan slides to a stop across the clearing and looks back. A single player is just wandering around.
It's that big mouthy kid, he whispers, grinning. Look at him all alone.
I peer into the woods around us, uneasy. Maybe he's waiting for someone.
Or maybe he's lost. Kids are dumb.
My 10-year-old cousin built a robot cat out of some gum, a couple of screws, and a Coke can, I tell him. Kids these days are way smarter than we were. Let's go. Ethan shakes his head.
Let's take him out first. He only has one life left.
We only have one life left.
It's a game. The object is to win.
We have to sit down the entire drive back. My bruised ass doesn't care if we win.
Let's give it 2 minutes. If we can't get a shot, we'll run.
I reluctantly agree, and Ethan motions for us to cut through the trees and surprise him on the other side. I follow closely, watching the woods and keeping my steps quiet. But Ethan is right. There's nobody else around. When we reach the edge of the small clearing, the kid is still there, just hanging out, poking at sticks with his gun. Ethan leans in, his mouth next to my ear.
He's got a fucking headphone in. How cocky do you have to be to listen to music in the middle of a war zone?
I pull back to see his face. You're really enjoying this, aren't you? His smile is wide.
Oh, yeah.
Ethan lifts his gun, silently creeping forward with me at his side. We're 2 steps into the clearing when the kid looks up with a sneer, lips curled around a set of heavy braces. He raises his middle finger, and only then do I realize it's a trap. We don't turn in time to see his buddy come from behind us, but the next thing I know, my entire ass is purple.
I can't believe he flipped us off before his buddy shot us, Ethan growls. Smug little shit.
We're in the relaxation room of the hotel spa, waiting to be called back, and dressed in matching white robes. We are both so sore, we didn't even balk when we remembered what the couple part of the couple's massage entails, being naked and oiled up in the same room together. The door opens and a smiling, dark-haired woman walks in. We follow her down a long, dimly lit hall to an even darker room. A sunken hot tub bubbles in the center. Steam rises invitingly. Ethan and I make eye contact and then immediately look away. I clutch at my robe, aware that I'm not wearing anything underneath. I thought we'd head straight for the massage tables, enduring only a few quick moments of awkward maneuvering while we slipped under our respective sheets. "I thought we were just scheduled for massages," I say. "Your package comes with time in the whirlpool for a pre-soak, and then your therapists will meet you." Her voice is feathery and calm. "Is there anything else I can get you, Mr. and Mrs. Thomas?" Instinct has me opening my mouth to correct her, but Ethan swoops in.
"I think we're good," he says, and smiles his megawatt smile. "Thank you."
"Enjoy." She bows, and then quietly closes the door behind her. The hot tub gurgles between us. His smile slips away, and he looks up at me, grim.
"I'm not wearing anything under here."
Gesturing to the ties of his robe, he adds,
"I assume you're equally..."
"Yep." He considers the steaming water, and his longing is nearly palpable.
"Look," he says at length, "do what you've got to do, but I can hardly walk. I'm getting in."
The words are barely out before he tugs at the tie and I get a flash of bare chest. Turning abruptly, I'm suddenly very interested in the table of snacks and bottled waters against the wall. There's some shuffling and the sound of fabric falling to the ground before he moans, deep and low,
"Holy shit!"
The sound is like a tuning fork, and a shiver rockets through my body.
"Olivier, you have to get in."
I pick up a little cup of dried fruit, take a nibble.
"I'm good. We're both adults here, and you can't even see anything. Look."
I turn and reluctantly glance over my shoulder. He's right. The bubbling water reaches just below his shoulders, but it's still a problem. Who knew I had such a thing for collarbones? His mouth tugs up into a smile and he leans back, stretching his arms across the sides and sighing dramatically.
"God, this feels amazing."
Every one of my bruises and sore muscles practically whimpers in reply. The steam is like a set of fingers luring me in. Bubbles, jets, and the subtle scent of lavender everywhere. Naked collarbones.
"Fine," I say.
"But close your eyes." He does, but I bet he can still peek. "And cover them, too." He cups his palm across his eyes, grinning. "With both hands." Once he's sufficiently blinded, I wrestle out of my robe. When I signed up for this honeymoon, I had no idea it would involve so much nudity. Ethan laughs from behind his hands, and I dip my foot into the water. Warmth engulfs me. It's almost too hot, and I hiss as I sink deeper into the water. It feels unreal, the heat and bubbles all along my skin. I let out a shaky breath.
"Oh God, this feels so good."
His back straightens. "You can look. I'm decent," I say. He lowers his hands, expression wary.
"That's debatable."
Jets pulse against my shoulders and the bottoms of my feet. My head lolls to the side.
"This feels so good, I don't even care what you say." "Well then, I wish I had the energy to say something really bright."
I snort out a laugh. I feel drunk. I am so glad I'm allergic to shellfish. Ethan sinks lower into the water.
"I know we're paying the price, but did you have fun today?"
Maybe it's the fact that the hot water has left me more jello than sore muscles and bruises, but I actually did. Even considering I had to throw away my favorite tennis shoes and can barely sit, yeah, I did. You?
I did. Actually, aside from the whole Sophie thing, this vacation hasn't been completely terrible.
I peek at him through one eye.
"Whoa, easy on the flattery." "You know what I mean. I thought I'd hang by myself at the pool, eat too much, and head home with a tan. I thought I'd tolerate you."
I feel like I should be offended by that, but... same, really.
"Which is why it's so crazy to be here."
Ethan motions around us before stretching to reach a pair of bottled waters on the ledge of the tub. My eyes follow the movement, the way the muscles of his back bunch and then lengthen, the way droplets of water roll off his skin. So much skin. God, your sister would freak if she could see us now. I blink back to attention, reaching for the bottle he hands me.
My sister?
Yeah.
My sister thinks you're cool.
She... really?
Yeah. She hates all the trips you and Dane go on, but she doesn't get my Ethan hate.
Huh, he says, considering this. But don't worry, I'm not going to tell her I've enjoyed small snippets of your company. A smug Amy is the worst Amy.
You don't think she'll be able to tell? Don't you guys have some kind of twin telepathy or something?
I laugh as I twist open my water. Sorry to disappoint you, but no.
What's it like having a twin?
What's it like not having a twin? I reply, and he laughs.
Touché.
Ethan must be warm because he slides back a little before moving to a different bench inside the hot tub, one that's a little higher and leaves more skin exposed to the air. The problem, you see, is that it also leaves more skin exposed to me. A lot more. I see shoulders, collarbones, chest, and when he reaches up to push his hair off his forehead, I'm shown several inches of abs below his nipples.
Have you guys always been so...
He trails off, waving a lazy hand like I know what he's asking. And I do.
Different?
Yeah, according to my mom, since we were babies. Which is good, because trying to keep up with Amy would have driven me insane by now.
She's definitely a lot. Is it weird now that she's married?
It's been different since she met Dane, but that was bound to happen, you know? Amy's life is plugging along like it's supposed to. I'm the one who stalled out somewhere.
But that's all about to change. That's got to be exciting.
It is. It's strange to be talking about this stuff with Ethan, but his questions seem genuine, his interest sincere. He makes me want to talk, to ask questions. You know, I don't think I know what you do for a living. Something with math? You showed up to Amy's birthday party in a suit and tie, but I just assumed you'd evicted some orphans or put small mom-and-pop shops out of business. Ethan rolls his eyes.
I'm a digital identification planner for a research company.
That sounds made up. Like in Father of the Bride when she tells Steve Martin that her fiancé is an independent communications consultant, and he says that's code for unemployed. He laughs over the top of his water bottle.
We can't all have jobs as self-explanatory as a drug dealer.
Har har.
Specifically, he says, I specialize in budgetary analysis and breakdown. But in simple terms, I tell my company how much each of our clients should spend on digital advertising.
Is that fancy for boost this Facebook post, put that much on Twitter?
Yes, Olive, he says dryly. That's often what it is. Mostly, you're right. It's a lot of math.
I scrunch up my face. Hard pass. He lets loose a shy smile that rattles my bones.
Honestly, I've always loved geeking out about numbers and data, but this is next level.
And you seriously dig it? He shrugs, lifting a distractingly muscular shoulder.
I always wanted a job where I could just play around with numbers all day, looking at them in different ways, try to crack algorithms and anticipate patterns. This job lets me do all of that. I know it sounds super geeky, but I genuinely enjoy it.
Huh. My job has always just been a job. I love talking science, but I don't always love the sales aspect of the position. Basically, I tolerate it because it's what I've been trained to do and I'm good at it. But Ethan talking about his job is surprisingly hot. Or maybe it's just the water, which continues to bubble between us. The heat is making me drowsy, slightly lightheaded. Careful to keep the boobage below the surface, I reach for a towel.
I feel like I'm melting, I say.
Ethan hums in agreement.
I'll get out first and let the therapists know we're ready.
Sounds good. He uses his finger to indicate that I should turn around.
Not that we haven't seen everything already, he says.
I hear him drying off, and the image of it does weird electric things to my body.
The bathroom of doom sort of took care of that.
I feel like I should apologize, I say. You did throw up directly afterward. He laughs quietly, under his breath.
As if that would be my reaction to seeing you naked, Olive.
The door opens and closes again. When I turn to ask him what he meant, he's gone. Ethan doesn't come back to get me, and as soon as Diana, our new massage therapist, leads me down to the couple's massage room, I see why. He seems to be frozen in horror, staring at the massage table. What's with you? I ask out of the corner of my mouth as Diana walks across the room to dim the lights.
Do you see two tables in here?
He whispers back. I look back and don't get what he's saying until... Oh. Wait, I say, looking up at him. I thought we were each getting a massage. Diana smiles calmly. You will, of course. But since I'll be teaching you, and you'll be practicing on each other, we can only do one at a time. My head whips up to Ethan, and we share the exact same thought. I know it. Oh, hell no. Diana mistakes our terror for something else, because she laughs lightly, saying, Don't worry. Many couples are nervous when they come in. But I'll show you some different techniques and then leave you to practice them, so you don't feel like you're being graded or supervised.
Is this a brothel? I want to ask, but of course don't. Barely.
Ethan stares bleakly at the table again. Now, Diana says, walking around the table to lift the sheet for one of us to climb under. Which one of you would like to learn first, and which wants to receive the massage? Ethan's answering silence has to mean that he's doing the same mental calculation I am. Do we have to stay? Particularly given his exit line about reacting to seeing me naked, I have no idea how this question shakes down in Ethan's brain. But given my newfound fascination with his collarbones, chest hair, and abdominals, I'm actually tempted to go through with it. And I'm wondering whether it would be easier to receive a massage first, so I don't have to touch him and pretend to be unaffected. That said, one look at his enormous, strong hands, and I'm not sure having those fingers oil-slicked and rubbing all over my naked back would be that much easier. I'll learn first, I say, just as Ethan says.
I'll massage her first.
Our wide eyes meet. No, I say. You can climb in. I'll do the rubbing. He laughs uncomfortably.
Seriously, it's cool. I'll massage first.
I'm going to grab some towels, Diana says gently, and give you time to decide.
Once she's gone, I turn to him. Get in the sheets, Elmo. I'd really rather do the...
He mimes squeezing, like he's going to honk my boobs.
I don't think there will be any of that. No, I just mean...
He growls, wiping a hand down his face.
Just get on the table. I'll turn around so you can slip in. Naked, or whatever.
It's dim in here, but I can tell he's blushing. Are you... Oh my God, Ethan, are you worried about getting a boner on the table? He lifts his chin, swallowing. It's a good 5 seconds before he answers,
Actually, yeah.
And with that one single word, my heart gives an aching jab against my breastbone. His response was so honest and real that my throat becomes tight at the thought of teasing him. Oh, I say and lick my lips. My mouth is suddenly so dry. I look over at the table and feel my skin grow a little clammy. Okay. I'll get in the sheets. Just don't make fun of my body. He goes totally silent, totally still, before whispering an impassioned,
I would never do that.
I mean, sure, I say, feeling acutely the way my voice comes out a little strangled. Except when you have. He opens his mouth to reply, brow furrowed in deep concern. But Diana returns with her stack of towels. Ethan huffs out an incredulous breath through his nose, and even when I look away, I can tell he's trying to get my eyes back on his face. I've always appreciated my body. I even sort of like my new curves. But I don't want to be in a position where I feel like anyone has to touch me and doesn't want to. Then again, if I don't trust him and don't want him touching me, I could just tell Diana we aren't up for this today. So why don't I? Is the truth that I really, really want Ethan's hands on me? And if he doesn't want to, he can tell her himself, right? I look at him, searching for any sign that he's uncomfortable, but his sweet blush is gone, and instead he wears a look of heated determination. Our eyes meet for 1, 2, 3 seconds, and then his gaze drops to my lips, to my neck, and down the entire length of my body. His brow quirks, lips part a little, and I catch how his breathing picks up. When he meets my eyes again, I hear what he's trying to tell me. I like what I see. Flushed, I fumble with the tie of my robe. We're supposed to be married, which means we're supposed to know what the other looks like naked. And although we definitely got flashes in the bathroom on the boat, I'm not sure I'm ready for Ethan to get such a lingering, steady look when I drop the robe and hop up on the table. Thankfully, as Diana holds the sheet up and turns her face away to give me privacy, Ethan also makes a show of fiddling with his robe tie. Quickly, I drop my robe and scurry into the warm, soft cocoon. "We'll start with you face down," she says in a gentle, soothing voice. "Ethan, come stand on this side of the table." I roll onto my stomach as gracefully as I can, fitting my head into the foam face rest. I am shaking, excited, nervous, and so warm all over that the pleasure of the heated blankets has quickly worn off and I want to kick them to the floor. Diana is talking softly to Ethan about how to fold back the sheet, laughing about how if we do this at home, there's no need for the same kind of modesty. He laughs, too. Charming, breezy Ethan is back, and I admit it is easier like this, staring at the floor instead of making eye contact with the man I still hate, but also suddenly want to fuck into a coma. I hear a pump, then the wet sound of oil on hands, Diana's quiet, "about this much," and then, "I start here." Her hands come over my shoulders, kneading gently at first and then with pressure. She talks through what she's doing, explaining how to move away from the point of muscle insertion, spanning the length and shape of the muscle. She explains where to apply pressure, where to avoid tender places. I'm starting to unwind, to fall deeper into the mattress, and then she gives a gentle prompt. "Now you try." More oil. A shifting of bodies beside the table, and a deep, shaking breath. And then the heat of Ethan's hands comes over my back, following the path of Diana's, and I am melting, biting my lips to keep a moan inside. His hands are huge, stronger even than hers, a professional, and when he reaches up with a gentle finger to sweep a strand of my hair off my neck, it feels like a kiss. "This okay?" he asks quietly. I swallow before speaking. "Yeah, it's good." I feel the way he pauses, and then works lower at her encouragement, shifting the sheet away to expose my lower back. Even with the awareness that Diana is standing beside him, I don't think I've ever been this warm or this turned on. His hands stroke my skin, fingers kneading, slick and warm. "Now," Diana says, "when you get to the backside, remember, push together, don't spread." I cough out an incredulous laugh into the face cradle, grabbing a fistful of the sheets. Beside me, with his hands hovering just above my tailbone, Ethan laughs under his breath. Noted. Carefully, she shows him how to discreetly fold the sheet and expose only my leg and one butt cheek. I've had massages before, so of course I've had my butt massaged by professionals, but I have never felt more exposed in my life than I do right now. Strangely, I don't hate it. More oil, More slick sounds of hands rubbing together. And then those enormous hands come down, pressing into the muscle the way Diana instructs. Behind my closed lids, my eyes roll back in pleasure. Who knew a butt massage could be so awesome? It's so good, in fact, that I forget to be self-conscious and instead let out a near moan. Who knew you were so good at this? Ethan's laugh is a deep, rumbling sound that sends vibrations through me. Oh, I'm sure you knew whether he was good with his hands, Diana says playfully, and it's on the tip of my tongue to tell her to scram and leave us to our brothel room in peace. He makes his way down my legs to my feet. I'm ticklish, and it's sweet the way he's careful but steadies me, wordlessly reassuring me that I can trust him. He works his way back up and then down each arm, massaging my palms, and to the end of each fingertip before he slides them carefully back under the blankets. Great job, Ethan, Diana says. You still with us, Amy? I moan. Think you could massage him now? Diana says with laughter in her voice. I moan again, longer. I'm not sure I can move yet. And if I did, it would be to roll over and pull Ethan under the blankets with me. The heavy ache low in my belly isn't going to go away on its own. That's usually the way this goes, she says.
Totally fine with me,
Ethan says, and it could be my mushy brain, but his voice sounds deeper, slower, like thick warm honey. Like maybe he's a little turned on, too. The best thing about this, Diana says, is that now you can teach her, too. I feel bodies shift behind me, and she sounds farther away, close to the door when she says, I'll leave you two to swap if you like, or you can feel free to head back to the spa for another warm soak. I sense when she's gone, but the silence somehow feels fuller. After a few long beats, Ethan carefully asks,
You okay?
Somehow, I manage a slurred, Oh my God.
Is that a good oh my God or a bad oh my God?
Good. He laughs, and it's that same maddening, amazing sound again.
Excellent.
Don't get smug. I sense him coming nearer and feel his breath on my neck.
Oh, Olivia, I just had my hands all over you, and you're so relaxed you can barely speak.
He steps away, and then his voice comes from a distance, like he's walked to the door.
You'd better believe I will be smug as hell.
Chapter 10. I wake up and immediately groan in pain. Despite the wonder massage, I am so sore from being pelleted in the woods that I can barely pull the covers back. When I look, my arms are dotted with bruises so colorful, for a second I guess whether I showered yesterday after paintball. There is a deep purple one on my hip the size of an apricot, a few on my thighs, and an enormous one on my shoulder that looks like a rare geode. I check my phone, opening the newest message from Amy. Checking in for a body count. We remain alive against all odds. How are you feeling? Same. Not ready to venture out into the world just yet, but alive.
And the husband?
Oh, he went out.
Out?
Yeah, he's feeling better and was a little restless.
But you're still sick. Why isn't he taking care of you?
He's been in this house for days. He needed some guy time. I glare at my phone, knowing I have no reply that isn't going to end in us arguing. Maybe he ran out of beard wax, I mumble, just as I hear Ethan shuffling down the hall toward the bathroom.
I can barely move,
he says through the bedroom door. I'm polka-dotted. I whimper down at my arms. I look like something from Fraggle Rock. A knock sounds.
Are you decent?
Am I ever? He cracks the door open, leaning in a few inches.
I can't be social today. Whatever we do, please let it be just the two of us.
And then he ducks back out, leaving the door open and me alone with my brain while I try to process this. Again, when did the default plan become that we spend this entire vacation together? And when did the idea of that not send us both into a wavy bout of nausea? And when did I start falling asleep, thinking about Ethan's hands on my back, my legs, and between my legs? The toilet flushes, the water runs, and I hear the sound of him brushing his teeth. I am tripping. I am used to the rhythm of his toothbrushing. I'm no longer shocked by the sight of his live wire hair in the morning. I'm no longer horrified at the notion of spending the day just the two of us. In fact, my mind spins with the options. Ethan emerges from the hallway bathroom and does a double take when he looks into the bedroom at me.
What's with you?
I look down to understand his meaning. I'm sitting ramrod straight, with my sleep mask on my forehead, the blankets clutched to my chest, eyes wide. Honesty has always seemed to work best for us. I'm freaking out a little that you suggested we spend the day together, just us, and it doesn't make me want to rappel down the balcony. Ethan laughs.
I promise to be as irritating as possible.
And then he turns, shuffling back to the living room, calling out,
And as smug, too.
With this reminder of yesterday, my stomach twists and my lady parts wake up. Enough of that. Pushing up, I follow him out, no longer caring that he's going to see me in my skimpy pajamas, or that he's in boxers and a threadbare t-shirt. After our encounter in the bathroom on the boat, the hot tub, and his hands all over my oiled-up skin yesterday, no secrets remain. We could hang at the pool, I suggest.
People.
Beach?
Also people.
I look out the window, thinking. We could rent a car and drive along the coast.
Now you're talking.
He tucks his hands behind his head, and his biceps pop distractingly. I roll my eyes. At myself, obviously, for even noticing, and because he's Ethan and nothing gets past him, he cheekily does it again.
What are you looking at?
He starts to alternate between his two arms, speaking in a staccato rhythm to match the bicep flexes.
It looks like Olive likes muscles.
You're reminding me so much of Dane right now, I say, fighting a laugh. But there's no need, because the laugh dies in my throat at the way Ethan's entire demeanor changes. He drops his arms and leans forward, resting his elbows on his thighs.
Well, okay then.
Is that an insult? I ask. He shakes his head, and then seems to chew on his answer for a while, long enough for me to get bored and go into the kitchen to brew some coffee. Finally he says,
I get the sense that you don't like Dane very much.
Oh, this is some thin ice. I like him fine, I hedge, and then grin.
I like him more than I like you.
It's a weird silence that follows. Weird because we both know I'm full of shit. Ethan's frown slowly turns into a grin.
Liar.
Okay, I admit you're not Satan anymore. But you're definitely one of his henchmen. I mean, I say, bringing two mugs into the living room and setting his on the coffee table. I always thought Dane was sort of fratty and, like, a Budweiser in a beer cozy type. But what confused me is how you could be worse when you look so much more put together.
What do you mean by worse?
Come on, I say. You know, like, how you're always pulling him off to these crazy trips as soon as Amy has something nice planned. Valentine's Day away in Vegas. Their anniversary last year, and you took him to Nicaragua to go surfing. You and Dane went skiing in Aspen on her, well, our 31st birthday. I ended up eating Amy's free birthday dessert at Olive Garden because she was too drunk to hold a fork. Ethan stares at me, confused. What? I ask. He shakes his head, still staring. Finally, he says,
I didn't plan those trips.
What? Laughing without humor, he runs a hand through his hair. The bicep pops again,
I ignore it. Dane plans all of the trips. I actually got in trouble with Sophie for going along for the Vegas one on Valentine's Day. But I had no idea he was missing events. I just assumed he needed brother time.
A few seconds of silence in which I rewire my memory of all these things, because I can tell he's sincere. I specifically remember being there when Dane told Amy about the Nicaragua trip, how he was going to have to miss the anniversary of their first date, and she looked devastated. He said,
"Ethan, the dumbass, got non-refundable tickets. I can't say no, babe."
I'm about to tell Ethan this when he speaks first.
"I'm sure he didn't realize that he was canceling plans she'd made. He wouldn't do that. God, he would feel awful."
Of course he would see it this way. If the roles were reversed, I would do or say anything to defend my sister. Taking a mental step back, I have to admit that now is not the time to hash this out, and we are not the people to do it. This is between Amy and Dane, not Ethan and me. Ethan and I are in a good spot. Let's not ruin it, shall we?
"I'm sure you're right," I say, and he looks up at me gratefully, and maybe with a bit more clarity, too.
All this time, I thought he was behind those trips. He gets that now. Not only isn't he the judgmental asshole I thought he was, he's also not the terrible influence that resulted in my sister's hurt feelings. It's a lot to process.
"Come on," I tell him. "Let's get dressed and get ourselves a car."
Ethan's hand comes over mine as we leave the hotel.
"In case we run into Sophie," he explains.
"Sure." I sound exactly like the eager nerd in a teen movie agreeing with something too readily, but whatever. Holding Ethan's hand is weird, but not entirely unpleasant. In fact, it's nice enough that I feel a little guilty. We haven't seen her and Billy since snorkeling, so all this performative affection is probably unnecessary. But why take chances, am I right? Besides, I have become a big fan of those hands. We rent a lime green Mustang convertible because we are idiot tourists. I'm sure Ethan expects an argument about who should drive, but I gleefully toss him the keys. Who doesn't want to be chauffeured around Maui? Once we're on the northwestern coast, Ethan opens the speed as much as he can. People just don't drive fast on the island. He puts on a Muse playlist, and I veto it and put on the Shins. He grumbles and at a stoplight chooses the Editors. "I'm not in the mood for this," I say.
"I'm driving."
"I don't care." With a laugh, he gestures for me to pick something. I put on Death Cab and he grins over at me. It brightens the sun. With their chill sound blowing in the air around us, I close my eyes, face to the wind, my loose braid trailing behind me. For the first time in days, I am completely, no hesitation, no doubting it, happy.
"I am the smartest woman alive for suggesting this," I say. "I'd like to argue for the sake of arguing," he says, "but I can't."
He smiles over at me, and my heart does an uneasy somersault beneath my breastbone because I realize I'm wrong. For the first time in months, maybe years, I'm happy. And with Ethan, of all people. Being an expert at self-sabotage, I revert back to old habits.
"That must be hard for you."
Ethan laughs.
"It is fun to argue with you."
It's not a jab, I realize. It's a compliment.
"Stop that."
He glances at me and back to the road.
"Stop what?"
"Being nice." And God, when he looks at me again to see whether I'm joking, I can't help grinning. Ethan Thomas is doing something weird to my emotions.
"I did promise to be irritating and smug, didn't I?"
"You did," I agree. "So get to it."
"You know, for someone who hates me, you sure moaned a lot when I touched you," he says.
"Shut up." He grins over at me and then back at the road.
"Press together. Don't spread."
"Will you shut up?" He laughs this wide-open laugh. It's a sound I've never heard, and it's an Ethan I've never seen. Head tilted back, eyes crinkled in joy. He looks as happy as I feel. And miraculously, we spend hours together without arguing once. My mom texts a few times, Amy too, but I ignore them both. I'm honestly having one of the best days I can remember. Real life can wait. We explore the rugged shoreline, find several breathtaking blowholes, and stop to eat roadside tacos near a coral-strewn bay of crystalline aquamarine water. I have nearly 40 pictures of Ethan on my phone now, and sadly none of them can be used as blackmail, because he looks great in every single one. He reaches over, pointing to my phone screen when I scroll to a photo of him. He's grinning so wide I could count his teeth, and the wind is whipping hard enough to press his shirt tight to his chest. Behind him, the Nokolele blowhole majestically erupts nearly 100 feet into the air.
"You should frame that one for your new office," he says.
I look over my shoulder at him, unsure whether he's kidding. An inspection of his expression doesn't clear things up for me.
"Yeah, I don't think so."
I tilt my head. It's oddly obscene.
"It was windy," he protests, clearly thinking I'm referring to the fact that every contour of his chest is visible beneath the blue t-shirt.
Which, yes, but I was talking about the enormous ejaculation behind you. Ethan goes quiet, and I glance up at him again, shocked that he hasn't immediately run with this one. He looks like he's biting his tongue. I register I've veered away from insult territory and sprinted headlong into sexual speak territory. I think he's gauging whether I intended to be flirty. And then he seems to decide that I hadn't, which is true, but now that I'm thinking about it, maybe I should have been. And bends to take the last bite of his taco. I exhale, swiping to the next photo. A picture he took of me standing in front of the famous heart-shaped rock. Ethan looks over my shoulder again, and I feel us both go still. Admittedly, it's a great picture of me. My hair is up, but blown loose from the braid. My smile is enormous. I don't look like the pessimist I am. I look entirely smitten with the day. And hell, with the wind plastering my shirt to my torso, the twins look amazing.
"Send me that one, okay?"
he says quietly.
"Sure."
I airdrop it to him and hear the small ding when his phone receives it. Don't make me regret that.
"I need an accurate image for my voodoo doll."
"Well, as long as that's your intention."
"As opposed to..."
He leans into the naughty tone and won't let up on the eye contact, which suddenly screams, "Spank bank." My stomach rolls again. A masturbation insinuation. Suggestive humor. This feels like free-falling without a parachute.
"What are we doing tonight?"
he asks, blinking away and immediately clearing the mood. "Do we really want to push it?" I ask. "We've been together for..." I pick up his arm and glance at his watch. "Like 80 years straight. There are bruises, but no bloodshed yet. I say we quit while we're ahead."
"What does that entail?"
"I get the bedroom and Netflix. You wander the island to check on your hidden horcruxes."
"You know, in order to create a horcrux, you have to have murdered someone, right?"
I stare up at him, hating the tiny fluttering that gets going in my chest because he knows the Harry Potter reference. I knew he was a book lover, but to be the same kind of book lover I am, it makes my insides melt. "You just made my joke very dark, Ethan." He balls up his taco wrapper and leans back on his hands.
"You know what I want to do?"
"Oh, I know this one. You want to have dinner at a buffet."
"I want to get drunk. We're on an island, on a fake honeymoon, and it's fucking gorgeous out. I know you like your cocktails, Octavia Torres, and I haven't seen you as much as tipsy once. Doesn't the idea of a few drinks sound fun?"
I hesitate. "It sounds dangerous." This makes him laugh.
"Dangerous, like we'd end up either naked or dead?"
It feels like being punched, hearing him say this, because that is exactly what I meant. And the idea of ending up dead doesn't scare me nearly as much as does the alternative. About halfway back to the hotel, we pull into the dusty lot of Cheeseburger Maui, which boasts $1.99 Mai Tai Wednesdays. This is thrilling, as it is Wednesday and I am broke. Ethan unfolds from the front seat, stretching distractingly. I definitely do not grab an eyeful of Happy Trail, but if I did, I would notice how soft it looks against his hard, flat...
Ready?
He asks, and my attention rockets to his face.
Ready,
I say in my best aggressive robot voice. Definitely not caught swooning. I hold out my hand, beckoning, and for a hilarious beat, Ethan clearly thinks I want to hold his hand. He stares at it, bewildered. Keys, I remind him. If you're getting drunk, I'm driving. After he sees the logic here, he tosses them over to me, and given that I am the least athletic person alive, I manage to nearly catch them but ultimately slap them into a pile of gravel near the tire. Ethan laughs as I jog to retrieve them, and when I pass as he holds the bar door open for me, my elbow slips and digs into his stomach. Oops. He barely winces.
That all you got?
God, I hate you. His voice is a growl behind me.
No, you don't.
The inside of the restaurant is over the top and kitschy, and so positively magical that I pull up short. Ethan collides with my back, nearly sending me sprawling.
What the hell, Olive?
Look at this place, I tell him. There is a life-size shark coming out of the wall, a pirate complete with pirate ship mural in the corner, a crab wearing a life preserver suspended in a net overhead. Ethan whistles in response.
It's something else.
We're having such a good day not murdering each other that I'm going to be polite and suggest that we can go somewhere a little more highfalutin if you'd prefer. But I don't see a buffet anywhere, so...
Stop acting like I'm such a snob. I like this place.
He sits down and picks up a sticky menu, perusing it. A waiter in a Cheeseburger Maui t-shirt stops at our table and fills our water glasses.
You guys want food or just drinks?
I can tell Ethan is about to say, just drinks, but I jump in first.
If we're in this for the long haul, you're going to need food. I just had tacos,
he argues. You're like 6'4" and weigh 200 pounds. I've seen you eat, and those tacos aren't going to sustain you for long. The waiter mm-hmms appreciatively beside me, and I look up at him.
We'll check out the menu.
We order drinks, and then Ethan leans his elbows on the table, studying me.
Are you having fun?
I pretend to focus on the menu and not the curl of unease I feel at the sincere tenor to his words.
Shh, I'm reading. Come on, can't we have a conversation?
I put on my best confused face. A what?
The exchange of words, without banter.
He exhales patiently.
I'll ask you something, you'll answer, then ask me something.
Groaning, I say, fine. Ethan stares at me.
God, what?
I ask.
Ask me a question, then. I asked you whether you're having fun. That was my question.
I take a sip of water, roll my neck, and give him what he wants.
Fine.
Yes, I'm having fun. He continues to watch me, expectantly.
Are you having fun?
I ask obediently.
I am,
he answers easily, leaning back in his chair.
I expected this to be a hellmouth on a tropical island, and am pleasantly surprised that I only feel like poisoning your meals about half the time.
Progress. I lift my water glass and clink his.
So, when was your last boyfriend?
He asks, and I nearly choke on a piece of ice.
Wowza, that escalated quickly.
He laughs and gives a wince I find so adorable I want to spill his water into his lap.
I didn't mean that to be creepy. We were just talking about Sophie yesterday, and I realize I didn't ask anything about you.
That's okay, I assure him with a casual wave. I'm fine not talking about my dating life.
Yeah, but I want to know. We're sort of friends now, right?
Blue eyes twinkle when he smiles. The dimple makes an appearance, and I look away, noticing that others are noticing his smile, too.
I mean, I did rub your butt yesterday.
Stop reminding me.
Come on, you liked it.
I did. I really did. Taking a deep breath, I tell him, my last boyfriend was a guy named Carl, and...
I'm sorry, Carl?
Look, they can't all be sexy Sophie names, I say, and immediately regret it because it makes him frown, even when the waiter places a giant alcohol-soaked, fruit-filled drink in front of him. So, his name was Carl, and he worked at 3M. And, God, this is so dumb.
What's dumb?
I broke up with him because when the whole thing with 3M and the water pollution went down, he defended the company, and I just could not handle it. It felt so corporate and gross. Ethan shrugs.
That sounds like a pretty reasonable reason to break up to me.
I meet his high five without thinking, and then mentally log how awesome it is that he chose that moment to high five me. Anyway, so that was a while ago, and here we are. He's already put away about half of his Mai Tai, so I turn it back to him. Has there been anyone since Sophie?
A couple Tinder dates.
He drains the rest of his drink and then notices my expression.
It's not that bad.
I guess not. In my head, I just picture every dude on Tinder as expecting it to just be sex. He laughs.
A lot probably are. Probably a lot of women are, too. I'm certainly not expecting sex on the first date.
Or what, the fifth? I say, gesturing to the table, and then clap my mouth shut because, hello, this is not a date. Thankfully, my idiocy coincides with the waiter coming by to take another drink order, so by the time Ethan turns back to me, he's ready to move on. And as it turns out, Ethan is a really cute, happy drunk. His cheeks turn pink, he's got a perma-grin, and even when we return to the topic of Sophie, he's still giggling.
She wasn't very nice to me, he says, and then laughs. And I'm sure it made it worse that I stayed. Nothing is harder in a relationship than not respecting the person you're with.
He leans his chin heavily into his hand.
I didn't like myself with her. I was willing to try to be the guy she wanted rather than who I really am.
Examples, please? He laughs.
Okay, here's one that might give you a sense of it. We had a couple's photo shoot.
White shirts and denim with a fence backdrop? I ask, wincing. He laughs harder.
No, she wore white, I wore black. In front of an artfully dilapidated barn.
We both groan.
More importantly, though, we never fought. She hated fighting, so it was like we couldn't even disagree.
Sounds just like me and you, I say sarcastically, giving him a grin. He laughs, and his smile lingers as he looks at me.
Yeah.
After a pause that seems to hang, heavy and expectant, he inhales deeply and says,
I've never been like that before.
God, I relate to this more than I can say. Honestly, I get that.
Do you?
Before Carl, I say, and he snickers again at the name. I dated this guy, Frank.
Frank?
We'd met at work, but Ethan will not be deterred.
I know your problem, Odessa.
What's my problem, Ezra?
You're only dating guys who were born in the 1940s.
Ignoring him, I press on. Anyway, I'd met Frank at work. Things were going well. We had a good, sexy vibe, if you know what I mean, I say, and I expect Ethan to laugh at this, but he doesn't. Anyway, he saw me freaking out about a presentation one day. I was nervous because I didn't feel I'd had enough time with the material to get comfortable. And I swear, seeing me like that totally turned him off. We stayed together another few months, but it wasn't the same. I shrug. Maybe it was all in my head, but
Yeah, that insecurity just made it worse.
Where did you meet Frank again?
Butaki. As soon as I say it, I realize it was a setup.
Bukkake,
he sings, and I push his water toward him. It's Butaki, you dumbass. Why do you always do that?
Because it's funny. Didn't they run the company name through some test audiences or what's it called?
Focus groups? He snaps his fingers together.
That. Like, Urban Dictionary is right there. It's like naming a kid Richard.
He leans in, whispering like he's imparting some great wisdom.
He's gonna be called Dick. It's just a matter of time.
I register that I'm staring at him with overt fondness when he reaches forward, touching a careful fingertip to my chin.
You're looking at me like you like me, he says.
It's the Mai Tai goggles you're wearing. I hate you as much as ever. Ethan lifts a skeptical brow.
Really?
Yep. Nope. He exhales a little growl and polishes off his sixth Mai Tai.
I thought I rubbed your butt pretty well. Well enough to at least be shifted up into the strongly dislike category.
The waiter, Dan, returns, grinning down at sweet, pliable Ethan.
One more?
No more, I quickly answer, and Ethan protests with a drunken pfft. Dan waggles his eyebrows at me, like I might have a great time with this one tonight. Look, Dan, I'm just hoping I can get him to the car. I can, in fact, but it takes both me and Dan to keep him on task. Drunk Ethan is not only happy, he is exceedingly friendly, and by the time the three of us get out the door, he's received a phone number from a cute redhead at the bar, bought a drink for a man wearing a Vikings t-shirt, and high-fived about 40 strangers. He babbles sweetly on the drive home, about his childhood dog, Lucy, about how much he loves to kayak in the Boundary Waters and hasn't been in too long, and about whether I've ever had dill pickle popcorn. The answer is hell yes. And by the time we get back to the hotel, he's still drunk off his ass, but slightly more collected. We make it through the lobby with only a few more stops so Ethan can make new friends with strangers. He stops to give a hug to one of the valet attendants who helped us check in. I give an apologetic smile over Ethan's shoulder and check his name tag, Chris.
Looks like the honeymooners are having a good time, Chris says.
Maybe too good. I lean toward escape. I mean, the path to the elevator. Just taking this one upstairs. Ethan lifts a finger and beckons Chris closer.
Do you want to know a secret?
Amused, Chris leans in.
Sure. I like her.
I would hope so, Chris whispers back.
She's your wife.
And boom goes my heart. He's drunk, I tell myself. This isn't a thing he's saying, just drunk words. Safely in the suite, I can't help but let Ethan collapse on the enormous bed for the night. He's going to be rocking a pretty serious headache in the morning.
God, I'm so tired, he moans.
Rough day of sightseeing and drinking? He laughs, one hand reaching up and coming in for a heavy landing on my forearm.
That isn't what I mean.
His hair has fallen over one eye, and I'm so tempted to move it aside. For comfort, of course. I reach out, carefully sweeping the hair across his forehead, and he looks up at me with such intensity that I freeze with my fingers near his temple. What do you mean, then? I ask quietly. He doesn't break eye contact, not even for a breath.
It's so exhausting pretending to hate you.
This pulls me up short, and even though I know it now, the truth of it still blows through me. I ask,
so you don't hate me? Nope.
He shakes his head dramatically.
Never did.
Never? You sure seemed to.
You were so mean.
I was mean? I ask, confused. I scrabble back through the mental history, trying now to see it from his perspective. Was I mean?
I don't know what I did.
He frowns.
But it didn't matter anyway, because Dane told me not to.
I am so lost. He told you not to what? His words are a quiet slur.
He said, hell no.
I'm starting to understand what he's telling me, but I repeat it again anyway. Hell no to what? Ethan looks up at me, gaze swimming, and reaches up to cup the back of my neck. His fingers play with my braid for a contemplative beat, and then he pulls me down with a surprisingly careful hand. I don't even resist. It's almost as if, in hindsight, I've known this moment was coming forever. My heart vaults into my throat as we move together. A few short, exploratory kisses, followed by the unbinding relief of something deeper, with tiny sounds of surprise and hunger coming from both of us. He tastes like cheap alcohol and contradictions, but it is still hands down the best kiss of my life. Pulling back, he blinks